The 2017 AFL season is proudly brought to you by Toyota. Toyota footy. Oh, what a feeling.
Triple M footy is the number one football call on radio. And your front row.
For Fiat Professional, every worker needs a good wing van. Whether the spacious Fiat Doblo or the powerful Fiat Ducato, Fiat Professional is your right-hand van. Welcome to the Triple M Saturday Rub for McDonald's.
Triple M rocks footy.
Collingwood Geelong MCG Saturday afternoon. Where would you rather be? This is going to be absolutely sensational. Pies have got to keep winning, of course, if they want the top four and the double chance and all the rest of the Cats, I should say. And the Pies, plenty to play for in their last 2 weeks. Cats today and then Melbourne next week, both games here. They can shape what goes on in September. All of that to come, though. I'm liking the look of what I'm seeing around here today. I'm just enjoying. Bristle has come as loaded.
Yep.
He's had to bring a truck in underneath.
I have had to be escorted in. That much attack from different angles. I've got that much stuff today that's going to blow your brains out, Duck.
Let me explain what happened today. Yep. Normally we get here, and then if there's something going on, the Mashtak just pulls me aside and says, "Now just get a couple of minutes. You know, and we load her in the couple of minutes." Today, phone call. Pre-show.
So you're privy to it?
None of the info, just I want time. It was all I heard. I said, Bristle, I want time, two lots.
Well, I've heard there's two.
I have got two massive bombs today. One is going to rock the foundation of the media world. It's going to unbalance it.
It's not balanced to start with, but
it's going to unbalance it, and there's going to be a lot of going on in the back rooms. And the other one is just an absolute. It's a bit of a heave ho, and there's been some very, very bad stuff going on around the Etihad Stadium area, outside Etihad Stadium.
Well, we've got that to come. A couple of things you don't know out of Bristle as well. He is rocking and rolling on a Saturday afternoon. We're going to speak to Matty Scarlett, Jordan Degoe. The press conference is back, Damo's asked for a bit of time as well. Haven't had that for a while, actually.
You started that about 10 years ago on this Triple M show, Jim, but it's really only to ask you a question. You've been written about today.
One question.
I want to have the conversation now, but you reckon we should have it. Well, it's about you.
Righto.
Do you want to have it now or not?
We'll get to that later, Purple. But
you're a bit precious, Jim.
No.
I read today.
Oh, yes.
I read that today in the paper.
Yes.
You're a Sookie Lala.
I love that. I love the fact that women seem to be obsessed with me, Duck. It's been the case since I was a very small boy. I don't know what it is.
Tough problem to have.
I know. We'll battle through it. How are you, Wayne? Nice to see you.
I'm very good. I'm actually looking forward to this game today. I'll tell you why. Always towards the end of seasons, the last couple of rounds, BT, we've got a side that can potentially finish in the top four, and then we've got a team with no pressure on them whatsoever.
They play
with a freedom.
You're not really interested. You're interested in what I've got to say a little later on.
And always interested in what you've got to say, BT. Sat next to him on the plane, and always an interesting conversation behind scenes with the big fella.
Mm-hmm. He's got a real strongman look about him today.
Yes, he's got the tight black t-shirt. Yeah,
he's got that real don't mess with me sort of setup.
He hates anyone that brings a large. It's got to be a medium. refuses to wear large of anything.
And Purple, nice to see you. Fresh out of the Judd Cave. How was that last
night? Yeah, we had a night there, Jim, and the 1990 Hill of Grace was Juddy's personal offering, and Brownie did another Grange offering. Dars bought something from France.
It's become a bit elitist for me, the whole Friday night.
Has it? Yeah, I think Juddy likes it that way.
Yeah.
That is caviar to pigs too.
How he was
1990
there?
Hill of Grace. Was anyone else just glass denied?
No, it was all served. Warnie popped in for a little bit too. He brought a...
Now they're dropping names.
Well, he popped in, BT. He brought a Son Henry. My basket press, Jim, got swamped.
Shane Warne. Speaking of disgracefully handled things during the week, what about that?
Yeah.
What an appalling piece of... I don't even know whether you call that journalism.
He was body shamed, wasn't
he? Just papped, body shamed, and I loved what Red Panny wrote about that, actually. Because to then have staff writers take responsibility for just fat shaming someone who's trying to play a social game of golf, what the hell are we doing? Mm. Where are we at? How is the great man?
He was okay. He touched on that very briefly, but as you know, with Warnie, moves on.
He does. He moves on very quickly. Tell us about last night. I was at a party, a very nice birthday party, so I didn't get to see very much of the game at all, Duck, but it looked like a cracker.
What did we learn?
Well, Sydney are fast starters. We learned that. They jumped out of the blocks. But then Adelaide got control of the game before quarter time, and I thought dominated the game from that point on. And the only place they couldn't put pressure on Sydney was on the scoreboard, BT. In the first 20 minutes, Sydney were just ferocious on their attack on the footy. And they were able to, you know, like I said, really take control, hit the scoreboard, 7 goals, I think it was, in the first two, 6 or 7 goals. And then Adelaide couldn't handle that. When Adelaide finally realised, hang on, we've got to match them in that area, then they took control.
But that took a bit of doing, because this is a finals intensity game that we had at the start, where Sydney jump out of the blocks, right? And they get the break on them. And it was looking like there was no stopping Sydney. It looked like Adelaide couldn't get back into that game. So I think the fact that they were able to crawl their way back into the game and in front, in fact, was a huge psychological win for them, I thought.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And that was off the back of, I mean, they had a lot more inside 50s and, like I said, wasteful. Both had 10 set shots each. Adelaide kicked 3 goals, 7. Sydney kicked 8 goals, 2. Invariably, that's the difference in the game right there. But Tex Walker didn't have a big influence. Eddie Betts quiet. So a lot of upside for Adelaide. Clearly, Sydney needed to win that game if they want to finish top four and have a real legitimate crack at winning this year's premiership. For me, Adelaide, the upside is higher. And if these sides meet again, then they will meet in Adelaide again.
First round.
Maybe in a couple of weeks.
Interesting hearing, you know, through the lines over there and through different people that know Don Pike well, and you know him well, JB, that he refused to go down the rest path. So here they are. They're a club that's secured a top two finish, so they've got nothing to gain, really. They're going to have a home final. He refuses to rest players. He refuses to play players out of position looking, you know, for an edge here or show them something. He's the sort of guy, JB, that I'm told that is very interested in the momentum of where clubs are at, doesn't believe in altering and twisting that to possible detriment down the track, and also knowing, because one of the big things was yesterday, so Rory Sloane is in severe doubt whether he's to play, but he plays and he gets up, and surely he's a little bit sore, so you probably could have rested him. But no, we want him to play, and one of the reasons is that momentum, and the second reason is that, you know, we've got the bye coming up in the last round. Adelaide will then play in the first week of the finals. If they happen to win that,
they get another bye. Yeah.
They get another bye, and all of a sudden you've got these guys that haven't played a lot of footy. So that's why he's wanting to keep going and not rest these players. So I admire him for that, because I don't think you should tinker with the former players like that.
I totally agree. I think that's, he's handled it the exact right way. And let's be honest, they go to Perth next week to play West Coast.
Yeah.
They don't want the same as what happened last year. They don't want to go into a finals series having lost 2 games in a row. So they will want to win that game. Yep. And I agree. If the bye wasn't there, then by all means, finish top two. They would have probably done that. But given that they've got that bye, I like it.
The Swans story is obviously incredible. We've been talking about it weekly since that round 6 point of the season. But I don't think it matters, BT and Duck and Jim, if they don't make the double chance perspective. They need to have Richmond lose both games effectively. So it needed to have Richmond drop one. So that has to happen for them to do it. But I think they've just been against it ever since that round 6 point of the season, that it's not going to worry them too much.
15.
And that's, the two they've lost, as we know, by 6 points to the same team, Hawthorn.
But that's why this round is, I mean, the last round is absolutely fascinating. Because as we know, Sydney play Carlton in the last round, so they win that game. Richmond will beat Fremantle. Then they have St Kilda, a team that they got absolutely smashed by recently. It's going to come down to that game, because, if, as you said, if they lose that, then Sydney are capable of popping into the top four. It's just an unbelievable year.
So what do you think you learnt, Duck, in terms of the way Sydney play and the way Adelaide play? Adelaide big scorers, Sydney not such big scorers.
Sydney are rope-a-dopers. They are rope-a-dopers.
What's that mean?
They allow a lot of ball inside their defensive 50, so opposition get a lot of inside 50s, and then they absorb it, absorb it, absorb it, and then they go forward and court. They're very efficient when they go forward, but they allow a lot of ball in. So, you know, if you can get hold of them, I mean, obviously, you know, if Tex and Betts and those guys, with the amount of ball they got in there, they didn't have a big influence. Mm. So they do give you a chance, but they're very good at it, and they've been doing it for a long time.
And from an Adelaide perspective, Damo, Lingy said to Duck and I before the game last night, hey, look, just watch this part of the game. And what he was talking about was the change of angle. So Adelaide have got the ball at half back, and they have a little kick 20 metres towards the wing, right?
Yep.
And their player marks it. They never continue on in a straight line to continue. They always, the next kick is always a change of angle to catch everyone on that angle.
So as the defence slides, yeah, as the defence slides, that opens up that part of the ground. So that angle kick then just opens it up.
Opens it up back in the middle. And, geez, when you watch it and you see it happen, you go, gee, that is absolutely
sensational. And they were able to do that. I mean, they got through a lot. But a lot of the times when that ball's slow, that plays into, if you can move the ball quickly and and hit that kick, as you said, they just look unbelievably, like an unbelievable side. And look, we've known that all year. Offensively, they are brilliant, and they can score so quickly.
Hawthorn Purple fascinate me when they play Sydney, because they have an amazing record against them, and they play a different way to everyone else. They never kick to the outnumber. So Grundy and Rampy, there's always an outnumber in Sydney's back half, as Duck said. They just park the bus. You know, they've got all these players back there. So when you watch Hawthorn play, they just go, you know, 15-metre kick here, 20-metre kick there, and just draw the play, and then they'll go short Puopolo, you know, or short Gunston, and then they'll take the 40-metre shot, like basketball almost, where you're dragging people out of the zone.
Yep.
I don't get why other teams don't play like that. Teams go long to the outnumber and just absolutely play into Sydney's hands.
McVay, and we spoke about him last night, he's been ultra important coming back into this team. He's just an elite ball user.
If I said to you, Damo, who's the most effective kick in the Sydney team, who would you think?
In the Swans team? Would you go with a Papley?
It's McVay. McVay is their highest kicking efficiency player in the group that they have this year.
Is that because he doesn't bite a lot off bristle, or is
it?
Yeah,
he does kick within himself, and it's the little 20-meter present up kick that he makes. But that's what you're saying. So, yeah. And you know, some people are just trying to go long and trying to create something that's not really there. He says, "No, and this will work. I'll take this kick here."
His interesting situation, BT, unlikely to be at the Swans next year, but does want to play.
Yeah.
And the conversation, as far as I know, it has effectively been had along those lines. So he knows that, at least as it stands, there's no contract for him for the Swans, and what he's doing this year is the last he'll be doing for the Swans.
And he needs to play. Sydney need to play two finals for him to find his 300th game. So they've got to plan at least two.
Duck, your point, I just want to delve into it a little bit about Adelaide being the better credentialed team out of the result last night. If they did get more than four goals down, I know obviously they retrieved that and got back in front, but I just want to delve into why, just a bit deeper as to why you think they won last night's game from the big picture.
I think if you look at all the key indicators in the game, other than that first 20 minutes, then Adelaide won all of those. And that's an area that obviously Sydney really pride themselves on. And Adelaide were able to beat them in that area. Like I said, it was about their efficiency inside 50 and set shots last night. That was their downfall. If they are a little bit better in that area, they win that game.
Let me ask you about the incidents coming out of the game, Bristol and Duck and Damo. Firstly, Zach Jones, the hit on Crouch.
Unfortunately, and I said this last night, in the game of footy, you get a split-second decision. He's trying to get there to put pressure on, which you're told by your coach, realises he's late, turns the body, hits him, he'll get a week, I think.
Tex Walker,
you know,
this is the Redpath
who got 3 weeks for what he did. It is more in the chest than the neck.
He got one, Duck, if you want to look at it in isolation.
But he ended up with three.
Correct.
It is more in the chest than it is the neck. But if he gets rubbed out for that, let's be honest. We sit here and we have to make judgment on Jones and Walker, and the other one is Lever. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I haven't got a bloody clue.
Yeah,
well, I haven't got a clue, and have any of us really got a clue? We sit here and try and guess. Oh, week? No, he should get off. You know what? They could all get a week. They could all get 2 weeks.
The Tex Walker one.
It's just that's how confused we all are.
It's almost a stiff arm. You're almost going into Dusty Martin territory. It's just they've painted themselves into a corner here, and unfortunately, when you look at what's preceded this, Tex has to get a week.
Your man,
but
Lever.
He shouldn't.
Your man, Lever,
with the bump.
Mm.
Made a slight bit of contact with the chin,
yep.
Very marginally. What was the injury? Did he stay up?
No. Well, I mean, Rowan stayed on the ground for a little bit. He kicked the goal. stayed on the ground for a little bit. No, it didn't go off.
It'll be looked at,
concussion
for sure.
Or whatever. It'll get. You know what? Exactly. It'll get looked at. But who was the guy last week that hit the
that was the
shoulder?
Mummy, wasn't it?
No.
It was 2 weeks ago.
No, there was a hit last week, hip and shoulder, straight to the jaw.
Oh, yeah.
Player gets up. And
Ollie Wines on.
It was too. Ollie Wines. Bang. Now, put it this way. Off the back of that, if you want to use precedence, then Lever's got no case to answer.
Right. Ollie Wines on Langdon.
That's what it was.
Lever, BT, you've driven this story. You've revealed it to the footy world.
I've driven the story.
The Crows feel you're driving it. What's the latest, please?
Well, I haven't driven the story.
The Crows feel you are actually negotiating.
On his
behalf.
And I don't know what you're talking about. I just see a young guy playing footy and I'm thinking he's a pretty good player.
You know more than anyone else on this topic.
Is he leaving or is he staying Brisbane?
Well, I look at him last night and he's playing good, aggressive footy. He's looking like a player that's going to stay at Adelaide to me in a lot of ways. You know, with his aggressive nature, his willingness to participate in the team.
His game last night, and I haven't seen him as much as what you have,
and speak to him.
But his aggressive spoiling was sensational. He's got this really good balance and ability at the moment to know when to be really aggressive in that area, like spoil, and he spoils to the boundary, and when to go for the mark. He's got the perfect balance at the moment.
I'll tell you something that's happening in the Adelaide backline. They need to work out that when the opportunity arises for their loose man in
can't
the backline, it can't be Talia. But I get the feeling that Daniel Talia thinks it should be him.
Right.
Because when I'm looking at all of the defenders and I can see them pointing and I see them not almost at the point of arguing about who's going to get the vacant job, Talia clearly wants it, but I think has been clearly told perhaps by the coaching infrastructure and the players that, no, you're to take the biggest man and the deepest man and we will have either a Brody Smith or maybe even a Laird or a Lever or someone.
Is that a bit of demarcation?
You've got to have someone that's creative and is a great ball user.
And offensive too.
They are getting caught with Talia being the loose man too often. Now, if they want to slingshot and go quickly, he's not the man to do that.
Mm. Well, we need to get to a break because I've got a Bristle bomb times two.
Yes, now listen.
So one coming next. Oh.
Are they back-to-back or are we going to space them?
So split them.
Media World Foundation is going to...
Oh.
The crack might open big enough that a few might fall in today. Now, I'm telling you now, and Damo, I know you, and Duck, I know you, and I know that this is a funny thing. Duck doesn't know about this either. And this is so close to home, and I guarantee you that if you stay tuned, everyone will be shocked.
Often you move away from the magnitude of a bomb as it gets closer. This one is the reverse. You are really promoting this one.
It's a very, very good thing.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris. Every single day in Australia, people are busting their guts in starting and running their own businesses. It's a big deal. 60% of Australians are hired by small to medium-sized business owners. These guys are doing their bit, buying stock, hiring people, and paying their taxes. So what is it like to start your own business? How do you go from just running a business on the side after work to owning something much bigger? How do you make it your future? Join me on The Mentor, a weekly show on Podcast One where I speak to Aussie business owners who are working through just that. I find out what makes them tick. I help them work out their next steps for their growth and for their future.
The Mentor with Mark Burris. Listen now at podcastone.com.au or download the Podcast One app.
Before we get the big bomb from Brian, he announced last night that he got to Adelaide a little bit early before the Friday night game, and he had a bubble bath.
What?
At the Intercontinental.
Beautiful hotel.
Just had a little bit of spare time.
I'm feeling
a bit under the weather.
So Twitter went berserk and they thought Roaming Brian was going to be replaced by Foaming Brian. It's not a sight that you want to really picture a BT hopping into.
Did you put the dressing gown on after it, BT?
No, but what I never counted on was the displacement theory. That is, when you fill a bath up to the top and you expect to get in it without any water coming over the edge, at 130 kegs, yep. There's a fair bit of displacement. I think most of the water stayed within my unit. But I also
had bubbles all around his...
Normally you add just a little touch of bubble fluff. I put the whole bottle in. The whole bathroom floor was foaming bubbles. It was unreal. Anyway, I had a good time.
Now, Brian.
Phone McBrian.
You're going to make a call.
You declared a bomb.
Yes, now.
Pre-show.
Now, look, I don't know how to say this.
Oh, boy.
Because this is serious, Damo. This is not a laughing matter. Okay. This is a serious operation. And I'm not even sure whether he knows yet. He could be hiding something there that he may have had chitter-chatter that I don't know about. But what I do know is that one of us, one of you three, is in a position. This is stunning, Damo.
Listen, this is stunning. Will you please?
This is how it goes. We know the EJ Witten game, the famous EJ Witten game, which is coming up in 2 weeks.
Ducks coach.
Friday night. Duck, you're the coach of All Stars. I've played in it.
Jim's called it.
Yes. You haven't been involved, Damo. But the news is that you won't be involved. Anyway.
Thankfully.
The EJ Witten game is coming up. Now, Darcy, I think, is he a... Playing with
playing.
The
he's captain.
Allies.
Captain. I didn't want him to, as captain, by the way. I got overruled on that one. Yeah. But anyway, he is captain.
You're going to take the softest ruckman in it of all time. But that's all right, because he's going to be up against Monkey, who just wants to eat him. So that's all right. Now, listen, the serious part of this is that I'm calling the game. Well, you know, I've called the game for 20 years. Love doing it for the EJ. This is all about the charity, Damo.
Of course it is.
And men's health and all that sort of stuff. So this is what it's all about. Now,
I like where I think you're heading.
Now, Darce is playing, as I mentioned, and normally calls with me.
Yeah.
Right? But this year, Darce is playing. And, Bruce was, he was considered because he's the number one man. But he wanted to, you know, he's got other things to
wanted
do.
Wanted a week off.
Basil.
And Basil's, well, he's in Perth. That's a long way away. And he's got telethon coming up that he's preparing for over there.
Right.
Perth telethon, the 50th anniversary, I think, JB, of the Perth
telethon.
Hammer?
Who?
Hamish?
Hamish is...
He's going to be up the farm,
he's doing the hosting all around it. And he's doing all the cell top. Right. He's our number one host there. So he's got all that. So that we're short a commentator.
Okay.
I have been told...
Oh, here we go.
I have been told that James Brayshaw will be calling the EJ Witten Legends game.
Well, you would know that, would you?
On the 7 Network.
Oh.
So, JB, I now turn to you.
Look at this man. Jim.
And go,
Jim. Look at this
you.
Man.
Is this true?
Now, JB, I have a sort of knowledge of a few things.
Oh,
going.
Really?
And I want to know from you, can you confirm to the whole world that you will be calling the EJ Witten Legends game for men's health, prostate cancer, and all of that on the 7 Network? Is that true?
Yes, it is.
Well, there you go.
Information, Bristol. I thought no one knew that.
There it is.
BT.
Now, that's it, Damo. So this is a man that's coming in, and he's had a lot to do with it over the years. And I think one of the reasons he's taking it on is because your old man and men's health.
And my uncle died of bowel cancer. Yes. Yep.
So there you go. So this is
a man
that's not currently tied to a network. No,
correct. And he's one of the greatest caller going around, BT, outside yourself.
You happy with that, BT?
I'm ecstatic, but there's just one thing.
Oh, no.
There's a, what do we call it, Lukey? An induction. You've got to do the Channel 7 induction.
Oh, no.
And you've got to be prepared to wear a pin.
That's fine, but whatever it takes, Bristol.
And?
I'm behind the cause.
And?
What else
do you need?
Well, a pin.
Yeah, you've got to be able to have a pin.
What is?
You've got to have a great sense of humour to be on.
Yes, yes.
He's probably got that covered.
Yes.
I need to remind you of the fact that I was on the 7 Network before both of you back in the 90s for the best part of a decade. So actually, going back in a lot of ways.
Oh, you've also got to wear a Peter Jackson suit.
Nice.
Yes.
Which, they're great suits.
Yes.
But you've got to wear one of those. You do.
Well, I'm not sure. He's normally
I'm not sure JB's got too many Peter Jacksons hanging up at
George Kelly money.
Yeah, he's got to. You've got to wear the Peter Jackson, which interesting.
So what's the back line? All I know about this Damo is Lewis Martin called me during the week and said, "Would you like to do it?" It's the first I'd heard of it, and I was stunned. I must admit, because it wasn't on my radar at all. I said, I would love to do it because I think the cause is brilliant and I love the game. And Brian and I have called many times with Gary back when it was the Nines vehicle. But I know nothing more about it than that, other than I said, yes, I will happily help out. So
what do you need
me to do, Bristol?
I'm interested though, BT.
Come with your best stuff.
And Duck. What might happen with you and Channel 7 beyond this particular game?
See, this is the
news. This is where we need to take it further, BT.
This is the news person in you. You can't just take it for what it is, and that is a... One-off.
It's a bomb.
EJ Whitten bomb affair.
All right.
That JB
is going
to call
it up next
game.
Week, then, will we?
And just look at it as that, and look at it as someone contributing to charity.
That's it.
And
all right.
Health.
All right. I'll
That's
back
it.
Off the follow-up angle until next week. But I reckon there could be more to it the way you're looking a bit silly right now.
And you know what? That's a bomb. But I have got a bigger bomb.
So, so given that it's charity, you know, yes. I'd assume that you're not being it's not a paid not a paid
it's a charity
no thing. Pay Wayne yes, at all.
Duck just checking
very
it out.
Happy to help out
as coach of the All Stars. Duck not being paid.
So Bristol, what's the yourself, myself, and yeah. who? I've got no idea who's making up the rest of the broadcast. No one's given me any details, so I presume you must know.
No, I don't. there are a couple of others. I mean, I think Limo's going to be involved, so this is a bit of a gathering.
Some boundary riders down there.
Limo's going to be down there doing some roaming. Fun stuff and a whole heap of stuff. So there's a few of those guys that are all contributing to the men's health program. That's what it's all about.
And
people coming as a collective from all sorts of areas.
Tell me, Brian, because you and I, for about 10 years at Nine, did this game with Gaz. Mm-hmm. And during the course of doing that game, took an enormous amount of piss.
Yeah, we did.
Now, is that allowed or is it a little more conservative?
No, I know you're just, just shredding in there and we run a tight ship at Seven. But you've got to go with your normal and open up and bring James Brayshaw to the table.
So the blokes like the Goose, the blokes that come in from outside of the AFL sphere, you know, they might play in a league out in Moe or something.
Yeah.
They were especially targeted by us. They couldn't find the Sharon.
I remember Simon Goosey who kicked a million goals outside of the VFL AFL and boy, when he came into the AFL, did we give the million goal man a once over? I don't think he kicked the sausage.
I do remember that.
And I was at a local game of cricket, Bristol, that one of my young sons was playing in, and up came the Goose.
Oh.
Not overly happy with the treatment we gave him. He still had a slight grudge, but there was another unit that we found out later was a bit connected.
Yes.
Who we gave
there was
to.
The guy, that's right, from the Shepherd Fruit Bowl.
That's
there.
It, that's it.
And I forgot that. Anyway, he followed me up with a phone call. Just to let me know that
he wasn't happy with the way we commentated his efforts.
Yeah,
so,
anyway.
So Jim back on football broadcasting on
too
a
much
free-to-air
it,
network.
Don't make too much of a demo. It's about charity. Oh, it's
not
about the night.
That free-to-air network is Seven, by the way, Damo. Don't be scared to say it.
No, I'm just making the move, the point that Jim's going to another network.
The man we were thinking of that... was up in the fruit bowl up there at Ardmona territory at Shepparton. Was Perry Meeker.
That's Perry Meeker.
Yeah, yep. A great man. A legendary country footballer and became my mate.
That's it. After you gave him an absolute pounding during the game for being no good.
As a country football
that's
legend.
It. And then our man Gary, of course, because he's a Kyabram very close to Shep and knew the backstory of Perry Meeker.
Yeah.
Just mentioned to Bristol at about half time or maybe three quarter time that I'd go a little quieter on Perry because he's nicely connected.
People,
and suddenly Brian's whole outlook on the bloke changed.
He's a good player.
Some people hadn't come back from the orchards and this was a concern to me.
Very good. So time to do some news. Ducks here, of course, introducing you around the room, as is BT and Damo. We've got still to come Jordan DeGoey. We've also got Maddie Scarlett. The American BT drifts in and a little press conference later on as well. But let's get some news done. Rod Butters on the Footy Show, exclusive interview there with him. And plenty came out of it, Damo.
It did, BT. And again, we've discussed this on the Friday Huddle last night. I didn't hear what you have said about it, Duck, if indeed you have said anything about it at all in the context. Now, look, he just made some claims that basically he was addicted to alcohol and had a drugs problem during his duration as St Kilda president between 2000 and 2007. And Nick Riewoldt had a real issue, and obviously a legitimate issue, given that he, as he said at the night in question on Thursday, that he and others were pushing for a flag during that period of time, and to learn that decisions were being made under the influence was something that shocked him and hurt him, actually.
Yeah, look, it's a personal issue, isn't it? And it's sad. And, you know, my understanding, without having watched the show the other night, I read a little bit of it about it that was in the paper the next day, that he's now in a really good place and sober and everything else. And I can't comment on what he was doing at the time, other than to say clearly he was going through a pretty tough time.
And Gillon McLachlan, Jim, I think, has got a few things to worry about. But he yesterday got himself involved in media accreditation, which I'm staggered that he felt the need to. Now, I get they do control accreditation, but I would have thought that without a footy operations boss going into the finals, without an integrity boss, and now, as we learnt during the week, Jimmy Bartel standing down off the match review panel for business reasons. We'll touch on that in a minute because it is all part of this bigger picture story. But Gillon McLachlan now thinks it might be a good idea for the AFL to take away accreditation of people in the media who spread stories that cannot be proven. This is Gillon McLachlan yesterday talking about that.
I actually thought it was quite a good idea. I read that. When I think that... there's a responsibility everywhere. Our players, coaches, officials, everyone's held incredibly accountable every day. We are also talking about people's livelihoods and careers, and this allegation talked to integrity. So the thought that someone, if they actually just make something up that has such significant ramifications, I think that almost, you know, there has to be an accountability for that. And taking accreditation away seems to me to be a fairly logical outcome of that. So I reckon it is worth looking at.
I've got a view, BT.
To explain, this is a Brad Hardy story about Ross Lyon approaching Collingwood to be their coach.
Yep, that's what it stems off. I've got a view that the media is held to account, and public people may not think that's the case, but employers aren't going to keep employing people who get it wrong on a regular basis. And I feel there's enough accountability out there, be it the social media feedback, be it the obligations of your employer, be it the actions of your employer. I don't think the AFL needs to get themselves involved in this. They like to control the world. I don't reckon accreditation.
Probably agree with you there, Damo. Who would be the judge and jury of it? Would it be the match review panel that would step up and all of a sudden be making decisions on whether this was a true story or not such a true story? How would they define true and not true?
Would we start policing football clubs for the regular lies
they put out,
distribute to media and the public?
Okay, so, you know, I think that's probably going too far as well, but should these big media stories that get broken and you talk about sources, all of these sources all the time, should you have to sort of, you know, say who your source is?
No, you can't ever give up sources, Duck. And you know you, well, you can't. You
can,
and you don't
can
either.
Can I just say, well
the trust
what, it's
you have
very
in people.
Easy to just say I've got a source. But, and it's commonly used in not only people's private lives, but they're also, you know, obviously the football side of things as well. It's just too easy to say I've got a source.
But ultimately, the story's either right or wrong. And there's no in-between with some stories. So, and that person, whoever it will be, if it is wrong, is going to be held to account. You don't get a story wrong and get away with it. The industry is not wired that way, Jim.
I think you do a bit these days, Damo. I think more and more, because we've got such a vast group of people covering our game. Mm. It's so much, it's tripled in size since we've all been involved, I reckon, even quadrupled in size.
Yeah, 1,600 registered media.
Yeah, so I reckon nowadays a lot more mentality is around, oh, well, if it's wrong, I'll just move on to the next one. There's no putting your hand up anymore and saying, oh, yeah, I got that wrong, which used to happen, I reckon. I don't hear that very much. I think there's more a mentality of, oh, well, if it was wrong, I'll just get on with the next one.
Would say the most frequent outcome of these stories and that is that when you find out at the end, there can be elements of that it can be
correct.
True.
Correct.
And so this is where it's hard to judge. It's not just was it right or was it wrong.
Yep.
The journo may have four of the eight elements that were 100% spot on.
Yep.
To me, that's still effective.
Yes.
And good enough.
Yep.
That there is some truth in the matter.
And often, again, we won't weigh this conversation down too much more than this, but often when you actually do go with a story, it is right, and by going with it, it then causes a chain of events or a reaction which alters the way it may have been presented. But we will move on because Jimmy Bartel, Jim, we said on Thursday night that he had stood down from the match review panel for business reasons. He gave a context to that on 3AW last night, but he basically has said this to people around him for some time too, that the football decisions that the match review panel has to make in terms of the bumps and the tackling are separate in his eyes, and I like the way he distinguished it, BT, to the punching motions, which he feels should be actually differently categorised.
Yeah, the jumper punches and that sort of thing. Yeah,
like the non-within football movement. Yeah. So I like his take and view on a very complicated part of the AFL system. So and I would hope that the AFL maybe go down that path, but he won't be part of it now.
So what he was actually saying was that, hey, listen, if we're going to continue to come up as a match review panel with decisions like we have over the last couple of months, then I actually don't think I want to be party of those decision-making processes because I actually don't agree with them.
With that, and the reason he's still down, BT, and I take him at his word, always do with Jimmy, it's business reasons that he can't commit to ongoing work with it. But we do also hear, you know, potential frustration around it.
I think that's nice, and that's a good bit of spin. But I think the reality is that he just didn't want to be associated with the decisions that were being made because he didn't think they were right. And I think that, you know, we're only listening to what Duck said a moment ago about, you know, he's not sure what's going to happen to the people of in precarious situations last night. And that's what we're getting back to here. We don't know. And so he didn't. I say, good on you, Jimmy.
Yeah, and he's been really good for the system this year.
Phil Davis.
Jim, he has copped a fair bit of grief. Cameron Ling last week really focused on his diving, and it related to the Jack Redpath incident and also prior to that last year with Tom Hawkins from Geelong where he went down. I know that Phil is really, and the club, GWS, is really annoyed at how this commentary has come back on him as being the focus of it. What I do know, he got hit in the windpipe and started coughing. So there's a reason for him reacting the way he did to Redpath. And you can still all judge him. Everyone will. And he knows how that works. But what I also know, too, that he went out of his way to assist the Western Bulldogs lawyers who were preparing for that tribunal hearing to provide some information that they were able to use unsuccessfully in the end, but in a way that was favourable to Redpath. So I just wanted to at least show the other side to it. Everyone from the Bulldogs is really having a crack at him. He meant nothing of it and also tried to help Redpath get away from the 3 weeks he ultimately got from the tribunal hearing by way of working with or at least speaking to Western Bulldogs.
So here's what needs to happen. We need to pin someone for fake diving. We need to nail someone with a 2 or 3 week suspension and this will stop instantaneously. There's too much going on in football of players taking a dive. It's confusing the umpires, confusing the match review, confusing the tribunal, confusing the umpires. No one's really sure did he really hit him or not because it's hard to see that decision immediately. So we need to pin someone for fake dropping sooner or later.
Well, that's the thing. And when you look at the match review panel and what is going on with them, if a player does throw his head back or he does go to ground, then automatically they think there's more force involved. Whereas if a player just stands there, some of the things that have happened this year, I would argue that they've been hit harder, but some players stand there and well, I guess, cop it.
It's embarrassing.
Others don't. I'm not saying that Phil... I don't necessarily agree with Lingy. I don't think Phil has dived. We've seen a hell of a lot worse. And you're right. And the other thing is, just like players, some players have harder heads and you know, you can tackle them harder without them getting concussed. There are players that know how to and can cop a knock, you know, whether it be a punch or a push, better than others. There are guys, BT, as you know, that have, you know, they might have trained in that area. They might have done a bit of boxing. They might have done a few of these things. So, you know, a push to them or a little punch to the chin is absolutely nothing. Other guys that haven't been subject to that, you know, they don't handle it as well.
It is embarrassing, Bristle, for the umpires because they don't see it all and then sometimes get it wrong, which is why I don't understand on the field, Damo, why the fourth umpire isn't involved in those situations and says to the main bloke, no, mate, I saw it all.
Yeah.
There's nothing in it. Don't pay him a free. Just play on.
And if that's on vision, That doesn't have to be an instantaneous decision. It can be a next stop in play decision. So the guy upstairs can have a look at it.
Bring the ball back to that point.
No, review it over 5 or 6 metres and just tell that guy, you know, whatever the penalty is, or report him, or, you know, let him know that he's got to go and see the match review panel. It doesn't have to be instantaneous.
Like, BT, if you clip Damo and then clip me with the same force,
well,
what do you think
true.
The outcome would be?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm not as interested what happens next.
In the break, let's you just the same force, you clip Damo.
Well, and I'll hit him with a cheap shot, then I'll hit him with a real shot. There we go.
I think we should do that as an example and put it online.
Just have received a text, yes. Bruce McAvaney, supporting the decision that has been made to bring JB back for the EJ Witten Legends game.
The man.
Tim Watson, Wispy down there. He's the main man in the newsroom down there. He's officially given it the royal Tim Watson stamp as well.
Bloody hell.
So this is going to be big.
This royalty.
This is all fantastic. And I've since been told that those guys have been were consulted along the way.
Wow.
I wasn't, but anyway. those guys were. So they are very happy with that decision today, announcing JB to call the EJ Witten Legends game.
I reckon there's more to
seven.
This too, BT. I reckon it's not just the EJ Witten game. I reckon that's what you're trying to tell us.
Don't try and dig up the news angle on it. And they've got a big bomb coming short. It's a illegally explosive. It's legally explosive. So I've got to be careful.
All right, now, Brian. As our main man, and have been for a very, very long time, inaugural caller on Triple M Football, and you got underway 21 years ago. And then you had a little off-Broadway patch where you decided to go over to the AM man, but then you've come back
went over there to straighten up a bit.
Completely dominated since you've been back, to the point where, Damo, it's not just... Brian's not just a local operator.
No.
He's global.
Yep. Cool Breeze.
International Cool Breeze. That gentleman from somewhere
Florida,
in the States. Florida, I think he was, had latched onto Brian and said that his voice reminds me of an international Cool Breeze. So now what we've got is a gentleman by the name of Brian Barish from the US who's come over here. He's a very accomplished caller. Before we hear from Brian, let's hear some of his work, Hosemary.
Whenever the USA and Canada get together, it's like peanut butter and jalapenos. Dave Grzyak is stronger than a garlic milkshake, and boy, did he put on a tackle. Marked defensively by Fisher, and the USA will try and shake the Etch-a-Sketch and drop something new, Steve.
Yanich is going to send that one for goal. Gee, that looks pretty good. Yes, sir!
Wilson kept the ball in play, centering ball, moves it in front, ball game!
My God, that kick was uglier than my 10th grade Spanish teacher.
It's a twister. Brian Barish is with us now. Hello, Brian.
Hello, JB. How are you?
Right, not as good as you, mate. And this is amazing because the US, correct me if I'm wrong, is a much more conservative environment for calling. Much more straight, and yet you're going about this beautifully.
Yes, well, I've spent the last 20 years listening to you guys, to you and to you and to Rex Hunt as well.
Yes, the legend.
I used to love when the two of you were together because it was basically the same person.
Not bad, but Brian's your man.
How are you, Brian?
I'm all right, Brian. How are you, Brian?
Yeah. Things going okay, Brian?
I'm all right, Brian. How are you, Brian?
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Well, you're out here for the international series, Brian, of course, and Papua New Guinea just in front of our own eyes here, have just won the world championship.
Yep. Yes. New Zealand by a point.
Yeah.
By a point. Yeah, we was expecting a very good game, and actually, not surprised at all, I thought it was going to go down the golden point. The U.S. boys will probably be a little mad at that because they did the double deed on them because they knocked them out, they beat them at Montrose, and then they knocked them out on percentage.
Yeah.
So if you watch...
Not too much detail, Brian. just as a matter of interest, there wouldn't be a lot of football played in the U.S., so I imagine employment opportunities would be... It would be sparse.
This isn't my day job.
Right.
I'm in IT.
Right.
So do you watch Friday Night Footy and the new segment, which has just gone gangbusters in the AFL world, Roaming Brian? And do you think you might add that to your repertoire?
I already have.
Oh, nice. Oh boy!
I did it here at the when we were at Government House, and I went around interviewing not only the American players but everyone else. The only difference is I think most of them expected me.
So given now that we've figured out there's a sort of little bit of a stalkerish attitude here by you, Brian, that did you hear earlier on our show today and also last night that Brian had a big bubble bath and he's thinking about having a foaming Brian. Well, you think you might sort of go down that path?
No.
you got a little bit of Brian. Have you got a bit of just a little bit of geek Brian about you?
A little
given
bit.
That you're in IT, you know, you're sort of
a little. My goodness, I mean, you know, I'm about this two steps away from being an angry nerd.
What amazes you about commentary in Australian sport, particularly football, because it is such a fast game with so many names and so many rules? What sort of
you have to know the players, and the thing about doing the games here is I didn't know a lot of the players. I still don't know a lot of the players, but I know the Americans, I know the Canadians, I know some of the European girls, I know some of the Great Britain women as well. And it's just, you have to be on top of the game. And I was an ice hockey fan growing up. So there's an ice hockey caller named Mike Emmerich, and that's who I kind of patterned my style after.
Oh. And do you emphasize the key moments within a sporting contest with phrases like boy, oh boy, and wowie?
No. No. Well, I do say things like, I do puns a lot, and I did, I say that kick was like one of my Aunt Becky's cookies. It looked good coming out of the oven and then crumbled into nothing at the end.
How many times have you been out here?
Yep. How many times have you been to Australia?
This is my very first time. Yep.
And have you seen an AFL game before the one today?
I've been to four. In fact, I was here at the G back in 2 weeks ago when they had the Parade of Nations. My very first exposure to the G was coming out that tunnel right there and walking around with all the teams and giving the kids high fives. And the only other time I've then been that wobbly-kneed was on my wedding day.
Wow. It is an incredible place, the MCG. So, I've been to the States, as has Damo, and seen NFL footy, and some of those stadiums are pretty amazing. But they don't touch this... For sheer size.
No, they used to have stadiums like this back in the 70s. They wanted to have multi-purpose stadiums.
LA Coliseum,
Veterans Stadium from my hometown in Philadelphia. But the problem is they were basically concrete toilet bowls. They were concrete donuts. This has personality. This has a lot of history. There's nothing else in the world like it. And all those stadiums, they want to be. They want to be this.
Hmm. Well, it's great seeing you. It's fantastic that you've come out, and you're actually calling the Women's International Grand Final at Etihad tonight?
Yeah, I'm actually probably going to miss the entire game of this so I can get over to Etihad and get up to call that game.
Well, go and enjoy it. Good seeing you.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Nice to meet you, Brian.
Likewise. Thanks, Brian.
Well, speaking of Brian, I think Jose Mary's got it back. You can have a listen to this as you head out, Brian, because this is our main man back when he first started broadcasting in the early 90s, having a caller on the line called Brian.
Brian of Epping. Brian, bad luck, Brian. You're on your way to work too, Brian, I suppose.
That's right, Brian.
Good on you, Brian. Thanks for your call.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
So many Brians.
That's it, I love it.
Hi, I'm Gary Megan, and I do a little show on Podcast One called A Plate to Call Home, and it's about fascinating people all centered around food. This is a show for foodies, but it's more than that. It's a show about the people and the stories behind food. I think you know that I'm obsessed by food. Everything in my life revolves around it, and I love nothing better than to spend a little time talking about people that are equally as passionate, sharing their stories and getting to know what makes them tick. It's called A Plate to Call Home, and it's available on the Podcast One app or on podcastone.com.au.
We have got a bit more news to get through before Scarlo jumps on. Jesse Hogan back playing for Melbourne. Quickly.
Back playing for Melbourne. Jim, yeah, only 2 weeks or two missed matches from that.
Good effort.
You called it. You both called it, didn't you? With the collarbone
down in Hobart.
And it's an incredible comeback that he can be back so soon. It's even quicker than what Lin Jong recovered from last year. That was meant to be a world first.
Incredible toughness and bravery.
Tom Boyd also playing, which is good news.
It is good news. There's a lot to wade through with Tom Boyd. Football has become the secondary aspect to his clinical depression duck. But when you do get to return to football via the VFL, which he is doing this weekend, clearly there are some positive steps being made. But a long way to go. And Luke Beveridge, 2 weeks ago, Jim, as best he could, gave the indication that AFL was unlikely to be part of what he was doing this year. Of course, things can change on that front if the Bulldogs keep pushing through, but it does seem unlikely that he'll be seen again on an AFL venue this year anyway.
It's a sad story, that one. I mean, this is a young man with the world at his feet.
So are you saying if they make finals and progress and... That he won't be part of that, despite the fact that he's playing in the VFL today.
Missed so much footy, BT, and there's a conditioning component to the missing the footy as well, as you well know. He was able to train pretty much through it. He certainly had a period of time away from the footy club. It wasn't prolonged, but when he came back, he got back into the training. But again, it's been multiple weeks now that he hasn't played any form of footy at all. And as we now know, round 22 going into a finals. And again, if they lose one of these two games they've got remaining against GWS, it's about to start, and Adelaide next week, well, it won't matter anyway from an AFL perspective for him.
A Hawthorn? Port Adelaide Hawthorn, you're talking about?
No, the Dogs have got... I was looking at the wrong one. Yeah, Hawthorn Adelaide, next week. Yeah. Sorry, I was looking at Adelaide.
Our thoughts are with him, and good luck for that game. Josh Dacos plays today, the son of the legend.
What do you know about him, BT?
I don't know much about him.
Yeah, because I know nothing apart from what I've read.
He looks similar. I'm told he has similar type feel for footy, which is the little alternate sort of unusual, freakish ball handling. I'm told that he's got a bit of that. So if that is true, then but it is interesting. They've taken a long time to play him. It's been emergency quite a few times, and they've only just fitted him in now, which is interesting.
His old man, Duck. Oh, did you have more?
No, I was just saying, I love the fact that when Collingwood put the teams out, it was Dacos, Moore, Brown on that line, and they are all sons of guns.
But Pele Dacos, the Macedonian marvel, or he would now be the Bosnia-Herzegovinian marvel, he was so far ahead of his time with what he did with the footy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You watch the boys doing it now, all of this around the corner kicking and, you know, outside of the boot bananas and dribbling them along the ground and all of the freakish stuff that modern players do with the footy. He was doing that 30 years ago.
Plus the sublime evasive skill that he had and the ability, which not many people have. Duck, you know what it's about here. Kicking the torpedo. Yeah. Only one guy in each club can really kick it consistently.
Yeah.
He just picks it up and he just kicks a torp whenever he wants.
And that year, what did he kick?
97 or 8?
97 or 8
in
goals.
The premiership.
In the premiership year.
As a small forward is unbelievable. Yep. When you think, you know, we rave about these small forwards kicking 50.
Yep.
You know,
and
to
without
kick that
the
amount.
Speed of Cyril... His ability, Bristle, to sell premium candy.
Absolutely.
And just blokes grabbing air as Dakes would just bang, bang, and then through. He's one of those blokes that it didn't matter who you supported. If Collingwood were playing and he was on, you just had to be near a telly. He was a freak, Peter Dacos.
An absolute gun,
And let's hope that his young bloke has a great day today. Jago O'Meara playing.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, isn't it? Given that he has not played since round 6, and the rehab program that they got him on for his troublesome knee has clearly worked. Came back via the VFL last week, Jim. Played 3 quarters or thereabouts, got nearly 30 touches, kicked 3 goals. And they initially had a thought process that they might just keep him in the VFL, which will go into finals series as well. But I think by playing the AFL today or this weekend, it will... not allow him to go into the final series from a VFL perspective, I believe. So they've made that decision to get at least 2 more games of footy into his system with the express view purely to get him ready for pre-season. It's quite a bizarre way they've gone about it, but they've stuck to their plan and they feel they've cracked the big problem. That
almost looks like they want the football world to know that we've made a good decision here and we're going to vindicate that.
Yeah, I reckon there's an element of that. And they're confident in that despite what was coming out. But long time away from footy, and as we know, he's still only played the 3 AFL games to this point from the end of 2014. Missed all of 15 and 16.
While at Hawthorn, Dame, I'm hearing that James Sicily out of contract. Is that true?
True.
I'm also hearing that he's refused to sign the deal that's been put in front of him from Hawthorn.
Refused to sign.
And that has attracted the interest of at least 4 other clubs through his management. His management hasn't approached them, but they've approached the management on the back of him not signing the deal at Hawthorn.
So you're saying, about that? That is a development, BT. If I'm not doubting your information, I never do. I haven't heard that component to the ongoing situation with him being out of contract.
I don't want my accreditation to be withdrawn, but a little birdie told me this.
Well, if you're saying he's rejected the offer, it means there is an offer in place. And I was led to believe they were just in discussions. So that's interesting.
What's the difference between a little birdie and a source?
Not much.
The Cats just breaking up from their now traditional huddle. They walk out when they inspect the ground and the whole staff and everyone, they do it every week. Chris Scott has a chat to them out on the ground. They've just finished that and are now going out to have a kick with the trackies on.
Just another one, Damo. Is it possible, and I'm hearing that Collingwood in search of a CEO, Gary Peart has resigned and moved on, and there's been all sorts of talks about people that might get that role. I'm hearing with a little bit more frequency that Simon Lethlean, who left the AFL in his position, is becoming a candidate that is getting more and more sort of talk associated with it. Is that a possibility?
Almost a fact that Simon Lethlean will end up back in football, and I would think with a football club.
So is it too early or not?
No, I don't think it's too early. I haven't heard that, but I would think the football club that is prepared to go and get him is going to really benefit out of it.
Because he's a great operator. He would be an incredible fit for Collingwood, Simon Lethlean.
And perception-wise, obviously for those who don't know the name, he was one of the two AFL executives who resigned / dismissed over the... extramarital affairs that they both had. And I don't think there's going to be any issue from anyone in the public, let alone the football world, BT, should Simon Lethlean join a particular outfit. There's enough time served and there's still enough people, and we've discussed it at the time, didn't we, Jim, who were gobsmacked by the fact that the acts that were consensual between intelligent adults and with no ongoing problems actually resulted in dismissal from an organisation.
Yeah, so that happening to him will absolutely benefit whichever club he ends up at. He will do an outstanding job, and if that's Collingwood and they're smart enough to grab him, then smart by them. Harley Bennell.
Yeah, similar to Jager O'Meara, hasn't played since very late. In fact, the same round 22, 2015. He was still at the Suns then, Duck, and we know that he's had an extraordinary 2 years beyond that point, and it was already extraordinary to that point by way of off-field and on-field issues with him. But, I mean, credit to him, the fact that he's hung in there despite all the issues that have gone wrong. It was only 8-10 weeks ago he was kicked off or asked to leave an aeroplane for a condition that he was in. So, well done. He's copped a lot of heat, and Ross Lyon has backed him. It's obviously Ross's decision, and he needs to get him back. And a bit similar to Jager O'Meara, just get some footy into him before the season's done.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a great story, and I hope he grabs it with both hands. Like you said, he'll play two games, hopefully, and that'll give him some real confidence going into the preseason, knowing that, you know what, I've done some hard work and have something really to look forward to. And I think it's smart by Fremantle to do this. Saw some training footage of him during the week. Looked really fit.
Looked ripped.
Yeah, looked ripped. So, you know, I hope he does really well. Yeah. I really do.
We've got Matty Scarlett not far away. In fact, he may be ready now. So let's get down to Nez. First time we introduce Nez, the boundary rider, who's done a great job for us this year. Down on the ground with the superstar, Matty Scarlett. Nez.
Thank you very much, JB. Very brisk down here, and the breeze is certainly picking up. But the good news is blue skies ahead. As you said, I'm joined by Matthew Scarlett. Scarlett, no late changes. When we look at these two teams in recent history, I believe that the Pies have won 6 of the past 8. What is it about them that's tough to match up on?
Yeah, they've got the wood over us, that's for sure. So got our work cut out today. Look, our last couple of occasions been really poor around the footy. Their midfield, which is really strong most weeks, have got hold of our midfield, and we've also struggled to score and haven't defended that well. So our whole game's been really disappointing against Collingwood the last couple of times. So even though they have got a few of their big names out, it's going to be a really tough day.
We always talk about Joel Selwood, but Scott Selwood is the milestone man today. Game 150, which he admits himself he didn't think he'd get to that milestone with all his injuries. He's been an important part of you guys hitting your real straps with the hardness and the tackling in particular.
Yeah, super competitor, like all his brothers, I guess. Wonderful achievement for him. He come in midway through the year, and I guess he lifted the standards around the footy with his tackle pressure and just how hard he is, so... Big day for him. Hopefully the boys can get the job done.
Hey, Matty, you spoke about Collingwood having some stars out of that team. Is it harder to prepare? Damien Hardwick was talking about the fact when they played you guys last week, sometimes it's harder to prepare because when you know what you're going to get with those players. But when new players come in, you haven't seen them as often. How hard is it?
Mate, yeah, that's a good statement, mate. Obviously, a couple of these guys that haven't already forged a career or don't have big names, you're not really sure how they're going to go about it. And quite often those young fellas are really hungry to cement their spot in the team and to make a name for themselves. Look at our players this year, like Zach Guthrie and Sam Simpson. They're really hungry to come in the team and prepare well and play well for their teammates. So, it's those guys that are out of the side. They've really hurt us over the past couple of years, especially Pendlebury. So it is a massive out for Collingwood.
Maybe one of those little lights you're referring to there, Matty. Jake Collar-Jasny had one of his very good games for the Cats last week, didn't he?
Oh, he did, mate. He's had plenty of good games as well down back. I'm having a bit of a joke with the boys this week that quite often you get the recognition as a midfielder. But, look, he played on some great players last year as a defender, and he only lost his matchup once or twice. It's been a pretty good move, chucking him up on ball. He's one of our best endurance runners. He's quite a big kid. He's 96, 97 kilos. He's got a defensive mindset. He's good in the contest. So it's been a really good move. So he did play well last week, but he has played plenty of good games down back as well.
And the Stephen Motlop situation, extraordinary game from him last week. And again, in keeping with these inconsistent ways, though, do you believe, though, that might be a turning point for him after what he did last week?
Look, I hope so. It was just his pressure at the start of the game that really inspired his teammates. So we've challenged Motty to bring that again today. He was wonderful last week early, and I think when he's doing that, it lifted his teammates. It certainly lifted all the coaches in the box watching him run around and hunt bodies and tackle and pressure, and that's all we want from Motty. His running numbers are extraordinary from week to week, so he's trying really hard. Sometimes he just doesn't get on the end of the footy, but if he can bring that defensive pressure, it really helps his teammates.
Hey, Matty, after you finish this interview, I assume you'll go back into the rooms and you'll continue to talk to players. What percentage of players need a little bit of a motivational, I don't mean an outward motivation, but for you to be able to sort of motivate them inwardly as distinct from giving them technical information? Is that still happen a little?
It does, mate. Yeah, I guess that's the art of coaching, and I'm far from being a master at it. I'm still learning plenty about that, but there's certain guys in our locker room that you can go up and give a bit of a prod before a game. You know they'll get a response. There's other guys that I can go in there and have a joke with, like Lonigan and Mackie, and those guys that are pretty relaxed, and you sort of know they're going to get the job done every week. So yeah. It's about figuring out the personalities, but there is four or five guys that I'll speak to before we run out and try and get the best out of them.
Scarlo, you have a unique huddle out in the middle of the ground, the boys in the trackies, before they just go and have a kick and a feel for the surface. What happens in there, please?
Oh, Scotty just talks through the messages throughout the week. We have the day off before a game every week, so we haven't seen the players for a couple of days. So just reinforcing the messaging that was spoken about all week, and sometimes the boys speak up in that huddle as well. So it's pretty relaxed, but we just try and, it's a relaxed atmosphere out there, and if anyone has anything on their mind, they can speak up.
Hey, great chatting to you always. We'll let you go. You've got a massive day ahead. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Matty Scarlett.
Speaks really well, Matty, doesn't he?
Brilliantly. Yeah. Yep. I still, and I've said this to Damo many times, I still consider that to be the greatest exit from football of all time.
Yeah.
Just walked off the ground, told no one anything, and then sent the club an email about a week and a half later saying I'm done.
No farewell game.
No farewell anything.
None of it's announcing 4 weeks out, as a lot do and a lot have in recent times, and just looking for the quadruple send-off with, exploring every family member they can get onto the green stuff.
Some talent out of this Collingwood side. One of them is Jordan Dugowie, a very fine young player who joins us now. His hip's buggered, he just told us. So we're not going to see him for the rest of the season, only two games to go. Jordan, welcome to you.
Cheers, thanks for having
me.
So
tell us exactly what you got wrong with the hip.
There's a lot of muscles and things that go through the hip. I'm not exactly sure the terms, what they're called, but I think I've got a bit of inflammation, a bit of impingement in there. So I'll just go in on Monday in Tasmania and get a hip scope and clean it all out.
Why Tassie?
Yeah, that's a good question.
He's a specialist, so he's the man to do it.
Okay.
In Tassie?
Yeah, in Tassie. So.
Dude, they don't specialise in a lockdown.
Say I'm looking forward to it, but it should be all right.
And then you'll be right first day of pre-season, they reckon?
Yeah, pretty much. So he goes pretty quickly, that's for sure, and pre-season's right around the corner, so should be right.
What can we expect from young Dacos? I've never seen him play. I assume you have in the under-18s and stuff, PT, but what do you expect from him today?
Yeah, he's definitely grown since he's gotten to the club. He's put on a bit of size, and he just follows the ball and tracks it really well. He's got immaculate skills and just uses the ball really well. So I'm sure that's what we'll see from him today.
Did you ever see any of his old man at all?
I've seen some highlights. I can't say I've watched too much. So I think everyone knows the name.
So would he play forward more than anywhere else?
Yeah, I think so. He might get a little bit through the midfield there and on the wing. But yeah, most of the time when you come into the team, you sort of go forward and get your bearings at the start.
How tough's it been for you, Jordan, as a footy club? You got to 5 out of the 15 matches at one stage, meaning you couldn't play finals from that point on. How hard's it been to be motivated for these past 6 or 7 weeks?
Yeah, obviously it's frustrating. We had a lot of games we should have won and we didn't. Like you said, our form sort of got better towards the end of the year when things don't really matter anymore, I guess, because we're not playing finals. But I think every week we just want to do our best, and that's what we can really strive to do. And at this stage of the year, when finals isn't on the cards, it's just, play some decent footy and show what we really can do.
Is there a learning out of what you just said there with regards to how you have played better when there's almost nothing to lose? Is it something you can actually utilise next year to actually somehow use that attitude from the outset?
It's a hard one. I don't think there's really much you can learn from what we did, except for the fact that it's just going to require 100% effort. And when we play the way we want to, We play really well, and it's just making that consistency shine through, I guess.
When you talk about the way you want to, play the way you want to, when you hear commentary, and we sit up here and we watch Collingwood, and there are other teams that it's more obvious to us what they're trying to do. And at times we watch Collingwood play, and it really is. I mean, you know, your ex-captain years ago, Tony Shaw, said you play like crabs, you go sideways a lot. You don't really want to go forward. I mean, you know what, you guys clearly know what you want to do. Is it just a case of some games you just don't get it right?
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of games depend on how they defend, and when you get out there, a lot of things change. Like some games we want to use the corridor more often than others, and then some games we want to switch it and get outside the opposition. So yeah, I guess in that sense, it really does depend on the opposition. But we want to take the game on and make the most of our opportunities. I think our ball use has probably let us down this year in regards to that.
With the review that's ongoing, Jordan, have you or any of your teammates been asked for input into it from the football side of the review?
Yeah, we had a survey sent out to all the boys, and we filled it out, just talking about what sort of little improvements the club could make in order to make it better for us. So yeah, it was a pretty small survey, probably 15 to 20 questions, and just sort of getting our opinion and feedback.
And did you put your name to that survey, and you, as such, able to express your thoughts as genuinely as possible, or was it random? So to
yeah,
speak?
It was random. So it was optional if you wanted to put your name. So. I'm sure a lot of boys would have put their name because their feedback's really important.
Is again, I'm not asking you to tell us what you answered, but is there something generically that you referred to in your answering?
Not specifically, I wouldn't say. Just a few areas in regards to the way training's been and stuff like that, and workloads, especially for the younger boys. That's something I spoke about.
And what have you learned about Bucks, given that he's been under this constant spotlight all year? What have you learned about him that you perhaps didn't know?
Just how persistent he is. He hasn't changed the way we want to play or anything like that. I think we've shown that the way we play when we're playing well is up against the best, and we do really well. So, he's just been consistent with his feedback and what we need to do in order to make ourselves better. And when we have lost games we should have won, it's not the end of the world, and he doesn't make it look like that. He sort of does take a lot of the positives out of it.
Hard for a player ever to be underrated when he plays for Collingwood because it's such a massive club, but I've long held the view that Steel Sidebottom might be one of the more underrated players in the comp.
I'm with you.
To play with, the way he covers the ground and the way he uses the footy is just elite.
Yeah, 100%. Steel's come along in leaps and bounds, you could say, since the start of his career, and at the moment he's been huge for us, and like you said, he's definitely underrated in the competition. The way he runs, like you said, and uses the ball is elite, and definitely helps our defenders when he can get back and help them out.
Would he be close to leading your best and fairest, given the skipper's absence?
Yeah, I think for sure. He's had a really consistent year, and in terms of his leadership, that's really grown as well.
Tell us about the Cats. We just heard from Matty Scarlett saying that you guys have got them around the ball the last four or five times you've played them. You have got some outs in your midfield today. What's the planning around Geelong?
Yeah, obviously they're a really tough inside team, and they've got some quality star players. So it's just going to be in terms of getting first use of the ball, so winning that contested ball and making sure we spread from there. And which we spoke about throughout the week, keeping it basic. So if the option's down the line, take it and just get numbers there and keep it pretty basic in terms of that.
A lot of tats at Collingwood, Jordan. Do you get together and talk and say, look, I might get a spider? I'll get mum and dad, or what happens? Because it's, do you talk about what you're going to get and how you're going to get it and where you're going to get it?
Not really, to be honest.
Because you've got a couple.
I've got a couple of tattoos, yeah. I can't say I've spoken to many of the boys about getting any more, but I guess it's sort of just what you like and what you don't like. But there's still a fair few clean skin boys out there.
Yeah.
What's the off-season holding for you, please? You've got the hip op. How long does that lay you out? And after that, are you overseasing it somewhere?
Yeah, so I'll probably be 6 weeks without any training. So I'll get off crutches a few days after surgery. And then in a couple of weeks, a few of us boys head away, and we're going to over to Europe, so Croatia.
Nice.
Bit of Barcelona, so.
Nice one. Well, enjoy that, and good luck today. Big game for any time the MCG on a Saturday afternoon houses the Collingwood Footy Club. It's a big day, so we wish you well with it and your rehab and next year.
Cheers, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jordan.
PT's been just nicely warming up. He had a bomb that he dropped earlier on today.
I got a bit of twitch.
And now he's got another-y.
I got a twitch, and here we go.
Now, do you want to give your first one, though, BT?
Yeah, the first one, of course, was the announcement today that our own James Brayshaw would be calling the EJ Witten Legends game on the Seven Network. He has been asked by them and given the stamp of approval of all the people that mattered there, the go-ahead. So he is calling that game, which is fantastic news for the game. It's fantastic news for JB
Channel 7.
And everyone involved, and and for Seven, of course. But this one here, this has just got a little bit more spice to it. This is I don't know how to say this because I don't know how I can say it without drawing attention to the act.
Right.
But on Wednesday night, let's go back to Wednesday night. Just down the road from Eddie Had, there's a building there, and it's the Channel 9 building. Strangely enough, has a car park underneath it. And a friend of mine was just sort of heading towards the boom gate to come out. And he was almost T-boned by a car that was in quite a hurry. This car didn't see the said friend of mine and went within a whisker of... T-boning him up against the concrete wall. Apparently, the man that was driving the car had glasses.
Was the car black?
And anyway, so upon departing the Boomgate car park, the said car then, the one that almost T-boned the other guy in the car park, ran out onto, drove onto Wurundjeri Way.
Oh, exiting the precinct.
Yes, exiting the precinct, gathering some velocity at this stage.
Oh, it was peak out.
He was in the right-hand lane, which is really a bit of a lane hog.
Sort of a Lorimer Street style.
Always in the left. Yeah. And it was dark. It was moist. And my mate decided, after almost being T-boned in the car park, decided that he'd follow the instigator of the almost T-bone. And he decided he needed to lay off him 100 metres or two because he was dangerous. And the guy in front, let's name him Damo, decided that he would, darkish conditions with a haze. Yes. And a moist atmosphere.
Yes.
He decided that he would change lanes.
Oh, no.
But upon changing lanes, he didn't realise, and I say he didn't realise, that a pizza delivery boy on a 250cc step-through scooter with the large pizza hot box on the back was in the lane that he wanted to occupy.
Oh, no.
And so on Wurundjeri Way, you know there's some plants there that separate the verge from the railway fence.
That's it.
He was ushered off into a quite a large bush, and pizzas and crap went everywhere. The pizza box fell off the back of the scooter. My mate is 100 metres back going, Jesus. So he stopped to help the man, you know, try and gather up the margarita. The said Damo's pulled up down the road, realising that the pizza man had gone into the bushes fence and hit the dirt and the deck. And so this is a rather unique thing that was spotted. The Purple's driving skills.
Just eased a delivery van into the bush.
Look, I don't know about...
Delivery bike.
I reckon he's taken a bit of liberty with that part of the story,
Jim. This is true.
I would like to say the other part's wrong too, but I have to admit, I nearly cleaned up Tony Jones in that car.
Oh, the Chompers!
The Chompers.
You nearly and T-boned the Chompers.
I did. I'm quite embarrassed about it because I've been driving for nearly maybe 30 years and have never had nearly an accident. I only had two in the space of 4 minutes. and as I did what I did to TJ, I didn't know it was TJ, got down to the swipe position, Jim, you know the position well, and there's two lanes you can exit there. And I looked across and I thought, I'm going to apologise to whoever that was in that car.
Yes.
And as I did, I realised it was TJ, and that sort of made things interesting, and he was furious, and he had reason to be, because I did nearly hit him, but then 2 minutes later...
This was a man that was so enraptured with himself after the Rod Brothers exclusive that he just sort of twaddled off out of the car park without any thought of anyone else that could actually be leaving at the same time. And not one, but Raj, he was taken into the bushes, and he wasn't able to deliver any pizzas.
I don't know about that.
You're thinking you might have to put another inch on those glasses.
Yeah, I know.
Just
A bit of mayonnaise on the second part of it, BT, but the first part I can absolutely confirm.
It happened to be my mate that was on the pizza bike.
Oh, no. So you knew both people involved?
I knew all three people involved.
He came off the bike. he came off.
Yeah, he came off.
He did not come off.
He
I'm not even sure he
skidded
on the. He had leathers on. Hit the verge and rose up into a prickle bush.
And the pizzas?
And the pizzas were just
distributed everywhere. All over the town.
Jim, have you finished with me, BT? Because that unfortunately is true.
TJ was tempted to offer minimal assistance and take one of the pizzas with him.
Jim, I pick up the Herald Sun, as I do every single morning of every single week.
Yes.
And I go on Saturdays to the page 13 part of the paper.
Why do you do that?
Because sometimes there's something in it, Jim, and then it's usually you in there. And I found this one today under the headline, Boo Hoo Brayshaw. You've been called a delicate little snowflake that you have failed to move on with, quote, modern times. You've then been referred to as poor diddums. You're a sookie la la. You refused to speak to the journalist Alice Costa in question at a night in question 2 Wednesdays ago.
I wouldn't
ago.
Know that person if she jumped up out of Mawiti's in the morning.
You quote,
the person who spoke to me exiting that building looked nothing like the person on the top of that page. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I'm just reading the article.
Right.
Yeah, just to continue with the article, you never seemed to learn, and that you were clearly, according to the article, getting prickly for saying something unsavoury. And then the question was posed right at the end of the article that you're the former putting president, which you've disputed in a previous article
which
written
was,
by the same.
But again, absolute fabrication.
Have you ever had a shin bone in your body, so to speak? So what's all this about, Jim?
Let me just say this. To quote the great Dennis Pagan, I'm going to wander into Duck's territory and borrow a paganism. And Dennis used to say this regularly, Duck, if you start arguing with half-wits, it only takes about a minute before you can't separate you from the half-wit. So I'm not going to do that. I'm feeling positive today. Purple? I'm feeling positive. I'm going to be positive.
Right.
And I'm going to congratulate a young lady who works at that newspaper, who I admire enormously, whose name's Jackie Epstein.
Yes.
Because at that same function, and you guys know, I had to come in late to the function because I'd had a medical procedure on my foot. And then I had to leave the function almost immediately because I had another meeting. So I wasn't in the room long. I had no idea who was in the room. But I found out later that Jackie Epstein was in the room.
So was Fiona Byrne, by the way, who is fantastic
okay,
as well.
Okay, well, I didn't know that. But I found out later that Jackie was in the room. I'll ask you this, Purple. How many column inches did Jackie Epstein give what was said on the stage in the paper post that event?
I didn't notice any, but I'm not
none?
Sure. I didn't see any. Well, but I
tell you why it's none, because this is a person with class and ethics. So I admire Jackie Epstein enormously.
There's a fascination with that newspaper and you, Jim.
I don't know why, but I'm just saying to you that I think Jackie Epstein's a high-quality act. So I'm in positive mode, and I'm being positive about the fact that she was there.
They're obsessed
and yet
with you.
Didn't go down this path, and I think that shows you the class and the ethics that young lady has.
They're obsessed with you, Jim.
This is why you shouldn't miss a Triple M party, because this all goes on.
They're good. I was there.
Yeah.
I just left early.
You left early.
I'm glad I left early.
No, don't, mate.
And I was on that early that no one heard me.
Ridiculous obsession with us is what I don't
understand. It's you, Jim. It's you.
It's just like a...
It's
like an obsession.
You've provided so many centimetres of copy for them over the years. They're obsessed.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't understand. Well, you used but to
I do,
work there.
I,
you can tell
I do agree with, you know, there Fiona Byrne who will ring and you can have a chat with. She's... And Jackie, the same thing. She's fantastic.
You answer their call. Nui Dakoa,
is also
properly.
Another one in there that is, you know, does a great job.
As the season goes on, these Saturdays get more and more interesting. The focus of attention is always on Triple M. Everyone
no,
tries
it's on
to,
you, Jim.
Everyone tries to act as if it isn't, but it always is, and it always has been. That's why the 21 years have been so compelling.
No, it's just you, I think, these days. Jim. No, even Duck's not their flavour and their focus anymore, BT. They've moved on from it. It's just you.
Bristle, the roaming Brian. And we've also got Nath Brown just wandering in, of course, fresh off last night at the Judd game.
Well, I don't know where everybody is. I was out there watching a race. So I was just on Seymour Race 3.
Oh, no.
And they've brought me in because Brian's not in here. Duck's trying to change his T-shirt, how tight it is. It's unbelievable how tight that T-shirt is. But Seymour Race 3, I gave you the tip, Damo, and it got up.
Oh, I forgot to put that one on.
Understand that you went back to the well with the second bottle of Grange at the
And it was probably the third best bottle there, too, last night. The Grange was really good.
I don't know what's happened to you, Brownie. What's wrong with you lately?
In what way, Brian?
Well, you're drinking a lot.
Well, I've got four kids. I need a drink. But
well, clearly the magnificent scent of home Melbourne products are doing the job if you're bringing Grange to the table.
Yeah, well, I went past our pub, the Hotel Brighton, and it was a freebie last night, so that was good. But Juddy opened up a 1990 bottle of Hill of Grace, which was extraordinary. So it was a really good night. Shane Warne dropped by. It was really a strange night. He's a strange man, Chris Judd. The masks, I don't know. I think he has them just regularly. I don't think he went out and bought them specifically for the night. I think him and Beck wear them.
Go to @MMFooty right now to see the videos and the photos of last night. And we've never done any of this, Bristol, in all of our time, have we? Gone to an exclusive Brighton residence and broadcast.
Well, they're becoming very elitist in the way they operate.
Got a different way about them, the Friday night crew.
Yeah, and it's a worry. And, there's people dashing off to sexy land to costume up for the night and all sorts of things.
Is that true, Nate?
The judge said he did go down to sexy land. What was the lady's name? Fiona down there?
Cheryl. Keith, I think he said it was. Keith, he said he knows them on first name terms, the people who run it there, Jim.
They said just the usual, Chris.
Staggering, isn't it?
Yep. He said a slight issue about walking into the sexy land doors, he said, Jim, but
once
he was in there, he was fine.
Pretty comfortable.
Yeah, went straight to the mask.
So has he gone back again? Because he was
did it previously.
He did it previously.
Yeah, what he did the first time was just buy one mask for himself. Then yesterday bought
six masks.
And they had price tags on them of $60 reduced to $45. Oh, and he bought, I think,
they
six
were expensive,
of them.
Weren't they?
And they were weird looking things.
So didn't Warnie tell some good stories?
Yep.
They were fantastic. What a great night to sit there with the absolute hero of growing up and just talk cricket. Just amazing cricket.
He has a nice repertoire of stories too, Shane. There's lots backed up. He has had a lot. If he ever writes an unabridged autobiography...
He couldn't though, could he?
No, he couldn't. Have you ever
been fat, Shane, Brian? Like Warnie during the week, he got fat shamed during the week. Warnie, I was just wondering. I was looked around the box and looked at Duck, and obviously it wasn't going to happen to either of these guys. I thought I'd go to you.
Look at you, Brownie, is that you're getting way too far out of your sauce. You fit in well with the Friday night crew, and personally, you're just a big head.
Been no skinny shaved.
We used to be a lot more meat and two veg, didn't we, when we did the Friday nights? But this crew are alternative. Yeah, they're going a very different way about it.
Yeah, well, if they want to go down that track.
We've had wives' gatherings, BT.
I know.
I think, Jim, we actually like being around each other, which is not often the case
that's
on Saturday.
No.
This is where you've forgotten. It's not about you.
It's about each other.
It's about the listener.
No, but
mate,
you need to develop that rapport, BT.
Any sightings of Beck, the beautiful Beck?
No,
or
not
she
seen.
Just keeps
not seen. Oscar made his usual appearance, a little six-year-old Oscar who is a scream. But, Jim, you love reading body language and people's interactions.
Yes.
And I watched a little bit going on last night when Shane Warne walked in, and our man here, he does get awkward at the best of times in
socially
situations.
Awkward.
Did not talk for
he's
40
socially,
minutes.
He's
Nathan
socially
Brown, I'm talking about.
Inept, isn't he? He's socially, he just
stopped talking and just was staring at Shane Warne, and it was
king,
a bit awkward there for a while.
The king knocked you off your accent.
He did. I didn't know what to say to him. I didn't know what to ask him. So then I came out with ridiculous cricket question.
That's funny.
You okay over there, Brian?
I don't know what's going on, but I don't know.
Have you been listening to the Saturday Rub? Bristol's, this might be his best outing, actually.
We actually,
we're dropping bombs and you guys
Christina
are putting on masks.
Drove us in there, and me in here, and we're listening on the way, and she goes, just out of the blue, she goes, geez, James Brayshaw's a nice guy, isn't he?
Thank you. Not everyone agrees with that.
And then she followed up with, behind all that bravado and stuff, he's a really nice guy.
She's a lovely lady, your beautiful wife, and a very clever lady. The scent of home, I don't know if you get around it, Purple.
I have
the candles,
a product,
and now the beautiful scents,
I've
men and women.
I've asked you to bring some of those in, Brownie.
Well, I can't
I
exactly
get
bring them into the MCG, Duck, can I?
Well, put them in your boot. I'll meet you at your boot after the game.
We'll do that.
Very smart lady and doing a great job. Now, we can get around the grounds and tell you that the Western Bulldogs, 7 points, Port Adelaide haven't scored yet. They've dragged a pretty nice day up there, Brownie, which is a good thing. Anyone who's been to Ballarat knows it can blow a dog off a chain and be about 2 degrees. But actually, not too bad.
Yeah, it is, and under 14 one year we had to play an interleague game in Ballarat for Bendigo, and it snowed, so they called it off. So that's where it can get to. So hopefully, it'd be good if it did snow up there today.
I've heard the saying "blow a dog off." I've heard "scare the dog off a chain," which Mick Martin could do.
Duck, it can get seriously windy in that part of the world.
And after the sledging of Rob Murphy, he's finally made contact after 2 weeks, which was good. Yes. Did not mention it. He said that when the season's up, we should go out for a beer. And I said yes, so we didn't mention the sledging, so it hasn't been touched on.
You know what's interesting, Nafe, is we had Matty Boyd in at the Rush Hour this week. One of the better blokes you'll ever meet in football, Matty Boyd. And a great friend of Bob Murphy's. And in the ad break, Bill and I just quietly said to him, did you get across Brownie's, 18 sledges of the players, you know, from the other clubs if he was still playing? Yeah, yeah, I heard it. What did you think about the Bob Murphy one? Absolutely loved it. I said, how would Bob go with it? Yeah, none of us are really sure. But I think within the house, they were pretty content.
We just don't approach him with it.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So will we see a photograph of Bevo and Easton Wood at some stage with the Premiership Cup?
Not sure. Not sure.
I haven't seen one yet. It's got to be coming, doesn't it?
If they don't win today, and I think the odds are they probably will, the Western Bulldogs, but if they don't, Damo, what do they do with Matty Boyd? Because he's actually fit to play. I didn't think he was. I thought he had an Achilles and was a bit like Jordan Degoe earlier. That's the end. But he said to us, no, I'm just not being selected,
I think they're setting him up for a final game next week. On the basis, Damo, I'm not sure the current final situation with the Bulldogs, but if they were to lose today, does that mean that they can't get in the last game?
Almost certainly. They're outside the eight on equal points with the teams placed seventh and eighth, but they could actually win both games and not get in, the way the ladder is configured now. So dropping one would mean they're out.
I would say they're setting him up to play the last
Suckling's
game.
Just kicked a big long goal, so 13 points to zip.
But what do you think, Jim, if indeed they are still alive? I mean, if you're saying he's not being played.
You don't play him.
Really?
Yep.
If he's not in your best 22. Yep. I know the jury's out on farewell games. Some clubs and some coaches are like, nope, if you're not in the best 22, we'll play a kid. I think it was Ross
Cozzy. Cozzy who didn't get one?
Yeah, I think.
He got one, but there was talk that he wouldn't. Yeah,
and there's, I think, some coaches come out recently and said he doesn't believe in them. For me, if your team can't make the eight, Duck, I like seeing a Matty Boyd be presented to the fans one last time, and for the fans to be able to thank him for what he's done at that club would be great, I reckon.
Gifted a game. It's an interesting one because there'd be certain players that wouldn't want that game if they didn't deserve it. And I don't know Matty Boyd personally. You obviously would, Brownie. He might be a guy that would say, I don't deserve my, if he doesn't think that he's in the...
He'd be exactly that person.
Yeah, well, there you go. Right. So, but by the way, just looking from afar, I think he's in their best 18 if he's fit. Mm.
By the way, if you haven't played 250, don't bother announcing that you're retiring. no, wait until you retire. So there's something for you. Wait until you've played your last game, then announce and say, that's it.
That's good.
Which with Matty Scarlett, we talked about it earlier.
This should be reserved. We're really starting to... I'm seeing banners for 50 games. I'm going, we really should be reserving this for the legends, for those guys that have actually got it done in a big way. You know, 250, 300, 350 games. These are the ones that we should be celebrating that type of thing for. Not someone that's banged out a few games. I mean, if you've won a Coleman or whatever it is, like somewhere on that, then you should be revered.
I love the Matty. Just to finish on Matty Boyd.
By the way, I've had my Coleman stolen. I don't know whether you've known
that. What? No.
I've had two parties at my place. One was one of my young fellas had an Australia Day party, so there were a few through the house that night, and I had a party. So the Coleman's been stolen.
No,
so
really?
It was on a mannequin.
Was it with the tapes that were sold, maybe?
No, it had a thing on it, and it was there, and it's gone.
Gone.
So I'm going to launch the, speaking of looking after yourself, I'm going to launch the campaign to find my Coleman.
Right.
Or have another one minted.
So you had it just hanging on a mannequin.
I find that strange that he has a mannequin in the house.
In his house.
That's a bit weird.
With his Coleman just hanging around its neck.
What sort of mannequin?
That is an interesting question, Bristol.
It's a wood one.
Wood mannequin. Well, good luck with the hunting down of that. Hey, just finishing on Matty Boyd, Nath. I love the story about how he got to the Western Bulldogs. I hadn't heard it. Scotty Clayton apparently went down to...
Frankston.
He was playing in the reserves.
Yep.
Not even in the ones. And he went back to Plough, who was coach of the Western Bulldogs, and said, "I've found you, kid." And apparently Terry Wallace said, "What, playing in the Frankston twos?" He said, "Yep, I've found you a kid." And he said, "You should have a look at him." And apparently Plough said, "Why?" And Scotty Clayton said, "Because he'll die for you. This kid will die for you, and you should have a look at him." And apparently Plough turned around and said, "That's good enough for me. Get him here."
So they rookie listed him, and he got down to the footy club and was just an unbelievable runner, like gut runner, worked hard, worked his way through from the rookie list onto the main list, and that's exactly what you do. He'd die for the coach. And Scotty Clayton has got a brilliant eye when it comes to picking young talent.
Well, that is a great story. He's had an unbelievable career and is a ripping bloke. So I hope he does get out there next week. It'll be great to see him.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M rocks football.